It's hard to shift gears after news like we're getting out of New Haven this morning, so not going to shift gears right now. 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. One firefighter has died, another in serious condition after a house fire in New Haven this morning. Firefighters went in to rescue two people in the house, got them out successfully. They're going to be okay. But then there was a mayday call, and firefighters had to rush into the house and pull two firefighters out, and one didn't make it. We just had the mayor on, and it sounds like the firefighter was young, a dad, a husband, and just it doesn't get any sadder than that. Tom G., good friend of the show, chief at the Stanford Fire Department, on the show now. Good morning.
Good morning, brother. How are you doing this morning?
I'm miserable, yeah. Really.
It's tough. It's tough. It is tough news. Unfortunately, firefighting is inherently dangerous, and occasionally these things happen.
Yeah.
Despite your best efforts, it's definitely, as a chief officer, somebody runs the scene, it is your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been to scenes where we've had people trapped, and it looks bad, and it really is a roll of the dice. You know, the axiom in the fire service is you know, when a life is on the line, you risk a lot. You really put your guys in harm's way. You know, when you know nobody's in the building, you back it off just a little bit because you don't want to risk people's lives for so much for property. You know, imagine going to somebody's family explaining why something happened to them because we're trying to save their piano or something.
Yeah. Right.
But when somebody's life is in peril, we basically put it on a line, and sounds like that's what they did.
So bring me through like one of these calls. You guys roll up, everyone starts unloading, pulling hoses off, getting the hydrants going. Whoever's running the scene starts talking to someone in the neighborhood. Is there anybody in there? Right. Starts with that.
Yeah. Either the 911s will tell us that somebody's in there, and generally in a fire service, we always make the assumption that somebody could be in there, but you kind of hit the gas pedal based on your information, how aggressive you're going to do your searches and put guys at peril. But when you have neighbors, occupants, 911s saying, hey, somebody called from inside, they're trapped, or the neighbor said, hey, we heard people screaming inside and they didn't come out, or there's people standing out in the street saying, listen, my sister, my brother, my husband, et cetera, and so forth, they're in there and they didn't make it out yet. That's when you put the pedal to the metal, if you will, on your efforts.
And then are there people specifically trained to do that search and rescue that you say, you're going in? And how do you decide how many people go in for the size of the house? How does all that happen?
Well, I mean, your first two company will arrive and they'll generally get their hose lines in operation. They'll try to make a, you know, there's a lot of different strategies. Either if they know they can get to the person, they feel they can, they'll put all their efforts on getting to the person. If the fire's in a location that threatens occupants, they'll put their efforts on putting out the fire. It really depends. They're all different. The scenarios are different. Your option is put out the fire. Then anybody who's inside, if you can put it out quickly, the threat evaporates immediately. If the fire seems too much or it's really has a good chance of getting to the occupants, or the occupants are right in it, you got to go for the occupants. A lot of times we'll put ladders up. We'll do what's called a vest operation. We'll go in through the windows while the building's on fire, search around different rooms, and then we'll try to get them out that way. So there's a ton of different options. And as far as crews, every firefighter is trained to a certain degree to do search and rescue, to get in and search a room. It's a basic tenant of the fire service, but some departments have crews that are specifically, that's their specific function. Like the team I was on, that was our function, was rescue, was to go in there and do the searches and clear the building and exit.
What's the worst part of that? One, there's, you don't know the layout of the building, so you're just, and there's smoke, so you're just kind of trying to feel your way through, right? Yeah, there's total chaos, right? There's a lot of radio sound and calls in your head.
Listen, it's confusing. It's distracting. It is unlike TV. It is pitch black inside. So imagine going into if I woke you up in the middle of the night, drove you to a building that was pitch black inside and threw you in it and said, go find my kids, and you've never been there before. And not only do you have to find your way in, find the occupants, and then find your way out.
The building's also on fire.
But the building's also on fire.
And if they're spraying the roof, there's water coming down on you.
possibly. And you got to remember the structural components of the building oftentimes while it's on fire are weakening. So you have to be, stairwells can be missing, stairwells can be weak. Parts of the building could collapse on you and trap you. You can get disoriented, and not everybody keeps a clean building, if you will, an organized building. Some of the places that we go into, unfortunately, are in disarray,
right,
where there's a lot of extra stuff. I'm trying to be nice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, hoarding.
And you have to navigate around it. It's not like an empty room. You have rooms filled with furniture and stuff.
Clutter, yeah.
Pitch black, yeah, clutter. And you have to get around it. And people can be behind beds, under beds, on top of beds, in closets, in the shower, all over the place. So you really have to, and underneath things. So you really, the efforts are, it's tough. And you have to do it fast because you don't have a lot of time for yourself, and they don't have a lot of time. We're protected to a certain degree, although our gear does not protect you from a direct fire. So if that fire takes off while you're in the building, we have about, you know, less than a minute, and we will burn through our gear. It's not fireproof. We have a degree of resistance to fire, but if you have direct fire on you, we're talking seconds. We, you know, a lot of people think our gear is fireproof, and it won't burn, but the heat is so intense, it'll burn you through your gear, literally, and it'll kill you. And the atmosphere is superheated, so if you were to run out of air and remove your mask, two things are going to happen. Either the minute you inhale, your lungs are going to get burned from the inside out, and if you are lucky enough to survive that, the fluid release and everything else that comes with a burn immediately following will probably kill you with pneumonia or something else, or you'll lose all your lung function. Or the gases are so toxic, when you take off your mask, if you were to breathe that in, if you run out of air, it'll poison you, put you unconscious, and then you'll breathe in even more of the toxic gas, and you'll perish from that. So it's not a good environment.
When you have a crew outside hosing down the building, and then there's multiple firefighters in the building, search and rescue, and you hear the Mayday call, what happens immediately after that?
When you hear the Mayday, if you're part of the Mayday call is to identify who you are and where you are in the building. There's a couple of different mnemonics we use to help firefighters give the right information, because they're going to be under stress. If a firefighter is calling a Mayday, he is in trouble. They don't take this lightly, and they know what's a whole bunch of things come into play. But first of all, we need to know who they are and where they are, or where they think they are in the building. That's number one. Crews that are operating in that area will generally, including their own crew, will attempt to find the guy. Now, we have alarms on our SCBAs. You might have heard them during 9/11 if you watched any of the footage, if you heard the whistling sound or the warbling sound of the alarms. Those are on our air packs. And if when you don't move, that starts to go off. So we used to joke around, if you were lazy in a fire and we heard your alarm going off, that means you weren't working too hard. But it means most likely that you're down. We also have a way of activating that manually. So if your radio doesn't work, or you just want us, you actually want the crews to help find you, you activate that manually. It's called a pass alarm. And it's very loud and goes off, and we can hear it. And if you have a flashlight, you turn your flashlight on, you wave it around. And if you're down, if you're somewhere, it gives us a better chance of finding you. So there's a couple protocols that happen when somebody does a Mayday. It's generally the crews in a general area will start the search. The incident commander, if we have active fire, may tell the crews operating to continue to press the attack. At the same time, there may be a frequency change where the people...
What does that
or
mean,
the
press
guy,
the attack? That's like cover
press
it with
the attack
water?
Means we're going to continue to put water on the fire, either externally or internally, because most of our firefighting in the Northeast is done internally as opposed to externally. Externally is usually a defensive operation. Everybody's outside. We've pretty much written off the building. When we do interior attacks, you know, our intent is to save life and prevent loss of property through the interior attack and building. That's where a majority of our firefighting is done. And I believe you'll find that's the case here. So there's a lot of protocols that happen when a firefighter calls a Mayday. Crews in the area will obviously try to get that guy out. The incident commander will ask them if there's active fire, to those people working on the fire to press the attack. He may pull out, he may opt to pull out auxiliary people. Most likely a roll call is conducted either over the air or in person, where you sit there and we say, okay, now we're going to count and we're going to line up the names. I carry a roster of everybody who's on the fire, every machine in every position, and we'll do an active roll call and we'll find out where everybody is and who's missing, just to verify who's missing. And the incident commander should have an idea of where that, because that's my job, is to know where everybody is in the building at any one time, or where the crews were operating. That being said, then we'll start to do what's called a RIT team or a FAST team, depends on what department you're in. And their job is to, the incident commander would direct them specifically to go to that location, that last known location, either where the firefighter said he was or where we believe him to be based on our radio communications, and where the incident commander knows that was his last operating position. And their job is specifically on the fire ground. They stand outside. They're not involved in the active firefighting. Their job is specifically to go inside and get that person.
And that area is clearly not a safe area if there's a mayday call coming from it. So they're going into the most dangerous place.
Absolutely. That crew is, that is their job, and that's their only job on the fire ground. Monitor fire conditions, relay things to the incident commander they're seeing, maybe prepare the building, or if they see some doors locked or thing, or windows that are closed, or they'll put ladders up to help affect a rescue if needed. And then when put into play, their job is to get in there, find that guy wherever he is, and get him out.
I couldn't even imagine being on that scene and working the scene, and then someone you know, a brother, is pulled out, and the worst news is relayed, but you still have to keep working on the fire.
Listen, it's never happened to me. I can't imagine it. I was up at Worcester when they lost all those guys. They lost a few people. That was terrible. It was tragic. Rips the heart out of your department. Rips the heart out of the guys on scene. Everybody has self-doubt. And could I have done better? If I zigged instead of zagged, this wouldn't have happened. It's just the mental impacts after something like this are incredible. Everybody will question themselves whether they did a good enough job or whether they did everything they could, and it's just, you know, it's the after stuff that's even worse.
Yeah, man. All right, Tom, thanks for bringing us through what happens on a dangerous fire scene. We appreciate what you do day, and thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers to New Haven, guys. Stanford sends their, you're in our thoughts.
All right, thank you, Tom.
We'll talk to you later.
Tom G., Chief in Stanford. 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. New Haven fire early this morning. We lost one firefighter, another in critical condition.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.